Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. I have a stinking cold. I don't know exactly where I got this cold because I spent the weekend in the playground and I don't know if you noticed, but this weekend was fucking freezing and there's nowhere else to take children to do anything, so you have to stand in the freezing cold. So we were actually in a playground when it was -4. If you are in England at the moment, it is freezing. It's getting warmer, spring is coming, flowers are appearing. These are all the things I'm clinging on to. I hope wherever you are, this interminable lockdown is somehow today not as bad as another day, but it probably is because it is interminable. And I send much, much love to you wherever you are because, yeah, this is really, really tough. And if you are grieving in this period, you have nothing but my empathy because this is very hard. So wherever you are, just a reminder that you're not alone. And if you are new to this club, thanks to what's happening currently in our world, I'm very, very sorry that you have joined us, but you are definitely not alone. There are lots of us here and we are all part of the Griefcast Griefster community. Thank you so much for being a part of this. I've really got a cold. This is so rambly. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, rate, review, subscribe. If you don't fancy doing those things, that's all right. I understand it's a lot, it's too much to do. Just thank you for listening. This week I'm speaking to Kobe Amanaka. Kobe is a podcaster and all-round generally brilliant person. If you are part of the podcasting community in London, you definitely know him because he's just so brilliant, so wonderful. He's the host of the very brilliant Flicks Watcher podcast, which he hosts with Helen Sadler. He's also the host of the Wire Stripped podcast, which is actually just come back. They've just started their third season and they go through every single episode of HBO's The Wire. It's very, very brilliant. It's very successful. And he's the producer and co-founder of Stripped Media Podcasting Network. Kobe is such a lovely person and I was so grateful that he came in to speak to me about his brother Som, who passed away when they were both teenagers. This conversation was recorded in 2019 at Whistledown Studios when we were allowed to be in rooms together. Very exciting. Remember that? And since then, Kobe has actually rather delightfully had a baby boy. Hopefully, we'll be able to be in a room together soon. You have two very successful podcasts.
Yeah.
One of which I've been on.
You have been. Thank you very much.
Flicks Watcher.
Yeah.
And the other one is called The Wire.
The Wire Stripped.
The Wire Stripped.
Yes.
The Wire Stripped. Now, I've never seen The Wire.
Well.
I know. And I know that The Wire Stripped is entirely about The Wire, right?
It's entirely about The Wire. Literally so, zero things else.
Yeah. So, hence,
I haven't listened to that one, but I have listened to Fleet's Watcher. I feel bad about The Wire. Like, I just missed it. I just missed the gap where everyone was watching it. So, yeah, The Wire strips as you've had, like, the guests, people from The Wire,
yeah,
on it,
people,
right?
We always have guests from the show and people behind the scenes and stuff talking about the show and how we put it together.
Wow.
And super proud of how it kind of came about because it was just... It was my idea to talk about The Wire with my friend Dave and became this thing that's bigger than we could imagine it being and getting so many people involved. And it's kind of crazy. It was super, super insanely crazy for us.
And then Flix Watcher, obviously, is where you watch... Well, you explain.
So we get our guests, who are other podcasters such as yourself, they curate the episodes. You pick a film from Netflix that's available on Netflix in the UK and we sit around a table with two guests and have a laugh and talk about the show and talk about the film in a light-hearted way.
But it was interesting. So my one was with Edith Bowman.
Yes.
And I chose Don't Think Twice, which is a very like sort of easy to watch film about improv. And she chose Inception.
She did, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I thought we were just like watching like something light, but yes.
You were like me. We'd both seen it once, hadn't we?
Yeah, I thought I don't want to watch it again. It's so long. It's so intense.
It is.
You see my viewing. I'm actually a much better listener than I am viewer.
Yeah.
I thought it's a bit much, but it was actually really good.
Yeah, it was both great episodes. So
I mean, obviously, that's not why we're here today. But it's very nice to have to talk to you about nice things. So who are we remembering today?
My brother Som.
Som.
Most people call him Som. I call him Som. My family call him Som, but all his friends call him Som because it's spelled S-O-M.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Som. And you called it, but you called him Som.
I call him Som.
Som. Yeah. Okay. Okay. We can do either.
Yeah.
And so when did Som die?
He died in January 1997.
1997. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that was just before, the year before my dad died. So yeah, you've hit like the past the 20 year mark then.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So how old was he when he died?
So he would have been 16 on his next birthday.
Oh gosh.
So yeah, he was 15 at the time.
15 at the time.
Yeah.
So how did he die? What happened?
So he had, he was pretty much ill for most of his life.
Wow.
He was diagnosed with a disease called sickle cell anemia.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of, it's an hereditary disease, which kind of means instead of like the normal round blood vessels, frisbee-shaped blood vessels, you have ones that are sickle-shaped. And that means it's, you know, you get complications in your life. You get, can get shooting pains, massive kind of pains because the blood cells literally don't flow properly. They kind of get stuck and amalgamated and cause like really big shakes. And I remember when he got kind of diagnosed, I think I was like six.
Is he older or younger than you?
He was younger than me.
Younger.
So I just turned 17. He was about to turn 16 that time. And he, I remember getting diagnosed because he just started shaking. And then my dad's a paediatrician, he's a doctor.
Wow.
So I think he just kind of saw what was happening and thought, right, I know exactly what's going on here.
Yeah.
And scoots him up, put him into a pram. So at 6 year old, I was like, he's shaking. And then you put him in a pram and then my dad just like ran off to the hospital.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, well, that's a weird thing that happened.
Yeah, yeah, that must have been quite frightening.
Well, I didn't... I'd say it's just when you're kind of same age as your siblings and you play around with each other, you just kind of laugh at each other's stupid things that you do. Like, you know, when they fall over, you're laughing whenever you know, something goes wrong, the first reaction is to laugh at them rather than to understand. And six, 7 years old, I had no...
Yeah, you
no
just don't know, do you? Yeah, you're just like, oh, that's weird.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then when he came back from the hospital... He told me, my dad, my brother told me, Som told me that he was diagnosed with this thing called sickle cell anemia. And then I laughed again because I was like, what are you talking about? That's silly. Anyway, let's play on the computer.
Yeah. It's so hard as a kid, isn't it, to understand what these things mean, I think.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sure your brother probably had the same thing of like, when someone tells you these things, it's like, all right.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean for my life and my world? You know.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, so we've got no kind of frame of reference.
Yeah,
you don't actually, you can't contemplate what that might mean. Even if someone has said, oh, these cells in your body aren't the correct shape.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
I still want to play on the computer. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Can I do that, please? Star Wars, maybe?
Yeah. So he was ill for like from birth, really.
Yeah, he must have been ill from birth. Yeah. Just maybe hadn't been caught.
Right. Yeah.
And then I think one way they tried to treat it was via bone marrow transplant.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I was a donor for him and gave him my bone marrow.
Wow.
But that was like a weird thing as well. My parents just said, "Well, you're obviously a match." your brother said, we're going to do this bone marrow transplant. I was like, okay, that's what's going
to
happen.
And oh my God. But how does a bone marrow transplant work? Do you have to... I remember watching something once and saying, like, the person who has the transplant has to have stuff done to, like, increase the bone marrow. Is that right?
I think they have to do stuff to get your... Again, I was when this happened, I was 9 or 10, maybe.
Wow.
So now reading back on it, I'm going to butcher the explanation completely.
Yeah, don't worry, don't worry.
But I have to do some things to get his cells ready.
Right, yeah.
Before they can implant my stem cells, which they took from my hip, into him, so that there's less chance of rejection.
Yeah.
And more chance of, like, it's kind of working and taking properly.
Oh, my God. So you had to go and have, like, an operation, or...?
Yeah, I had an operation. I was under general anaesthetic, anaesthesia. General anaesthetic? General anaesthetic. general anaesthetic to do that. But I was just like, yeah, I'd seen my brother in hospital, so I wasn't afraid of being in hospital. And they just said, well, we're going to put you under. And I remember waking up, and then my dad presented me with a Liverpool football kit when I woke up, and I was like, that's okay, my hip hurts a bit.
Yeah. But I've got a Liverpool football kit.
Yeah, I've got a Liverpool football kit. And
oh my God, so you were about 10 when that happened?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. It's a lot, isn't it? It's a lot, but I can see that when you're a kid, you're just like, it's just what's happening.
Exactly.
It's like, okay. But like now you think about like a 10, you think, oh, having to have, and your parents as well, like two children having to have operations.
Yes.
Like that must have been so stressful.
It must have been, I mean, crazy.
Yeah. And how many other, is it just you and some? Or?
I've got another brother, Galibe, who's currently in the States at the moment. So he's younger still.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you the oldest?
I'm the oldest, yeah.
Oh, okay. And it was the three of you?
Yeah, it was the three of us, yeah.
Right, okay. God, so they must have been, that's a lot. three boys anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
It's stressful.
Running around, causing havoc.
And then, yeah, like to have two of you in hospital. So did the bone marrow transplant help, or?
As far as I understand, that's... did resolve the kind of sickle cell problem.
Wow.
But then he just had further kind of complications.
Right.
After the operation, he had to go into isolation, so to make sure that, because he had like zero...
immune system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there was a time where, you know, he had to stay at home for like a year.
Wow.
So he couldn't go to school for a year. And, you know, had to make sure we're super careful. Like if we got ill, if people were ill at school, we just had to, you know, take care so we didn't bring that back to him. And I think there's just that underlying... nothing, it didn't really resolve. I think they just brought further complications.
Oh.
And thinking about it, I don't really know what happened, but he had lots of stints in hospital.
Mm.
And he still went, you know, once he got out of isolation, he went to school and things, he went to the same school as I did.
Mm.
But it just kind of progressively got worse. So I couldn't really understand what was happening.
Yeah, quite what the medical details.
Yeah,
of. Yeah. It's hard as well because you were a child as well.
Yeah.
So I feel like that with my dad sometimes, like because I was 15, it's like I never sat in rooms and understood what doctors were saying.
Yeah.
You know, you just were like, oh, he's not very well.
Yeah.
Like he's
so
kind
like,
of
oh, this is happening now. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll go to the hospital and.
Yeah, sure.
And I think it's one of those things because these things happen when you're younger. I know for yourself, having heard you talk about your father before, it was a lot shorter, compressed
time
period.
Yeah, it was very short, yeah.
So for yourself, I guess, from 15 to suddenly having to go to a company, hospital appointments and things like that,
that must
have been
a bit of
a change.
Unusual. And yeah, even doctors were like, you know, the only one we'd seen before that was like just GP for like your colds or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. But for you, so Soam had that world had been very present, like
We're used to going to hospital, and it just became like the thing we did. And it's like, you know, some houses, some of our friends, they support Liverpool, some of our friends hated football, and it's just like in our family we go to hospital with a brother when he needs to go for treatment, and
we just went
and did that on when it needed to happen.
Yeah,
so it was just like an ingrained part of our lives. It would have been odd if it suddenly stopped in a way that he was like, if he suddenly became cured, it would have been like, okay, we're not going to hospital anymore?
Yeah.
We're not going to do this anymore.
So what happened as, you know, he approached 15 then? Did he sort of deteriorate very quickly or?
Yeah, so I'm not sure how, no, it wasn't really a noticeable deterioration from my point of view. So we took him out of the school I went to, secondary school that we were going to together, and he started going to school, which is around the corner, just says easier for parents to take him to school and not.
Yeah, yeah.
And if he wasn't able to go to school, then, you know, it was just easier. Things like he started using a wheelchair just because he couldn't really... Like, when he started secondary school, he was doing races and stuff like that. He'd do sports day and gym and stuff like that. But then a few years later, we'd put him in a wheelchair to go to places. But, with, you know, as far as my interaction with him was still... apart from when we were very young, we used to scrap and fight and stuff like that. We didn't really do that once you got older. We were just playing on the computer a lot. So a lot of that was still kind of the same.
And I guess when somebody's ill and in a wheelchair, they can play on the computer.
Yeah,
like, you're
exactly.
not like, yeah, it's not like, oh, he can't come play football.
Yeah.
And were you two like quite close?
Yeah, we were definitely when we were younger.
Yeah, yeah.
So get scouts together, have the same kind of friends, because we're only like a year apart.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the local neighbourhood and stuff like that. And then there's one year when I got a bike for Christmas and the youngest brother got a bike, but Sam was too ill to get a bike, so he got stereo. I was like, oh, interesting. Like the first CD player that wasn't in like the lounge was his. I was like, okay, this is good. I like this. And hang around in your room a bit more.
Yeah. You're like, so want to share the stereo? Totally. Like, that seems pretty fair. We should share the stereo.
I am the oldest. I've put the groundwork in. And it was one of those things. It's like the presents would be different because he wouldn't be able to do the same things
that
he would have done if...
he'd been well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, what was he like as a, you know, as a brother? Like you said, so computer games were obviously like a big part for you guys. Mm. Like, were you both sort of into computer games, or was he, like you said, did you argue about a lot, or did you talk about his illness or anything like that?
Didn't really talk about his illness that much because, again, it wasn't really, it seems abstract to other people, but it's just like ingrained again to what
it's
we were doing. But we, you know, got on really well, had lots of fights. You know, we would just like watch all the films together, look after each other. My mum used to work, so in the summer holidays, you know, I'd take care of him and my younger brother.
Oh, wow.
So we'd just be hanging around watching films and TV together, and it was just.
So
like,
was he into films and telly in the same way that you are?
Well, I think a lot of that's where that came from for me.
Wow.
You know, just like being at home with the brothers, and my parents had this thing about. My mum particularly recorded like everything off TV.
Oh wow.
Which is really odd. But, we, you know, when it became the holidays, we just looked through the list of films and we're like, The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. Interesting, let's press play.
Wow, Tootsie. So she just recorded all the films?
Yeah, just put all the films on. And I was like, Tootsie, that sounds a bit rubbish. And so we just like literally pick films based on the name, and then we'd also be able to go to the video shop and get like one film a day and stuff like that. So that was a lot of what we did together, was just hang around, watch films, watch The Cosby Show. Was like our favourite thing to watch.
I loved The Cosby Show too. Yeah. I mean, we all have to look back at some things, don't we? Go, oh no, I like that show. Anyway, yes. Yeah, that's really interesting then. So that obviously now films have become like such a large part of what you do.
Yeah.
And that's obviously where it was cemented.
I think it was.
Just watching and watching and watching. Me and my brother used to do that. My dad used to record stuff off the telly as well. Not quite as...
prolifically.
He would do more like, you'd be like, Metropolis, like, oh, okay, and then you'd sort of be watching it like, not quite sure I'm old enough to appreciate this. He was really into really into films a lot, actually. But that was like such a thing, wasn't it, just watching stuff on VHS and going to the video shop,
and you'd watch the same film like multiple times a week because A, there wasn't that many opportunities to watch it, and B, if you like Twins, why not watch it again like the day after?
Twins, and one we used to watch was Uncle Buck.
Oh, of course, that's amazing though.
I love that film. I should have chosen that. I don't think it's on Netflix.
It's not on Netflix, no.
I watched it recently, you know, in that slightly wary, oh, I hope it stood up.
Yeah.
And the bit where he drops the plate is still one of the greatest comedy bits I've ever seen.
It's
so good.
I'm reading this book, just finished reading this book called Wild and Crazy Guys.
About
the 80s, about those guys in the 80s comedy scene. So John Candy, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy, Steve Martin. And it's just, it's John Candy. John Candy and Bill Murray are the absolute like pinnacles of awesome people. And Rick Moranis as well.
Oh yeah, and I love Rick Moranis, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Yeah, oh
exactly.
My God.
Yeah. And so that, you know, that was another film we saw together at the cinema, and then watched it multiple times.
That was the fun. You could watch it at the cinema, and then when it came out a year later on VHS, you were like,
kids, this is how it used to be.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we used to like be like, oh, I get to watch it again. Yeah. Like, and that bit's still funny.
Yeah.
And then you'd rewind and watch. I know, they don't appreciate it. But that's really lovely. So you would hang out with him a lot then, even though he was ill. It wasn't like you were outside and, you were sort of in his world together.
Well, this is it, We, up until, you know, I started playing a lot more sports at school and stuff, and he didn't do that. But then he wasn't necessarily into sports in that kind of way. He didn't run around as much as I did. We would just hang out together, but I'd be the one that's doing the races and doing stupid tricks on my bike. But he was never really like that, that kind of personality. So again, that would have just been a different route that we'd gone down, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And so then, yeah, so he's 15 and he starts, so he got very sick or was he in hospital? What happened?
So again, this is kind of hazy for me, but I remember like, there's like one day on the way to school, my mum, sometimes I used to cycle a lot in school, but sometimes my mum would take us. And then there's like this random conversation that came out of left field, and mum kind of said, "Have you ever thought of what would happen if Sam died?" And I was like, "No, I just assumed that he's going to be a bit ill and maybe get better at some point."
Yeah.
And that kind of really kind of floored me because it just hadn't really crept into my radar.
So she said this on the way to school with you? Oh, wow,
like,
yeah.
Mum.
But I guess it's a really, they often say that because when you're walking along with a child, it's like walking with a friend, like not looking at each other, it's less intense.
Sure.
And it's like a casual, like a good place to be like, so have you? So I guess she was trying to, so maybe she could see you hadn't realised.
Yeah.
Wow, but that must have been hard then at 16 to be like, oh, okay, he's really not well.
Yeah, he's really not well. But still, again, I was like, oh, but he might die, so that means he might not.
Right, yeah.
So
I'm
not sure if it was a denial or if it was just not really understanding the scope of what might happen. But that was a bit of like, oh, shit, right, he could die because of this. Mm. And then I'm not sure, like I said, there wasn't a noticeable decline for that. He was just kind of inherently sick for a while. And then I kind of noticed a bit more kind of hustle and bustle with my parents a bit. And there's that last Christmas before he died. Sorry.
That's all right. Don't worry.
So last Christmas before he died, I remember Dad's paying a bit more attention. And we'd be like watching, I'd be watching films in the lounge, which is directly underneath his bedroom. Mm. I just remember Dad being in there more and more.
Yeah, so that was the last Christmas, and then he died in the January.
So he died like a few days later.
Oh, yeah, that's really hard. Because it's funny when you don't know something is the last something as well. Like, or it starts becoming obvious of like, oh, this is the last Christmas, you know, like, and then someone's too ill to be like, right, so you have to come downstairs and you have to like, we have to make the most of
this. You have to be around it,
this
is all single dancing kind of Christmas.
And it's really hard. So he was in his bedroom for that Christmas then. He's too sick to come downstairs.
So, he's in the house, he was kind of mobile and did things, but I think it was just the last few days with, I think my dad just kind of saw him getting weaker and weaker.
Yeah.
And as he's a doctor, I think he just wants to make sure he's nearby.
Of course, that must have been hard for your dad because he must have really known what's going on.
Yeah,
which in some ways is good, because I think sometimes people that often on this show, the shock is they didn't realise the severity of what was happening.
Yeah.
But for anyone who's in the medical profession, you sort of have the knowledge that you might not want at that point, actually it's really bad. Your poor dad, that must have been so hard.
Yeah, it's tough. I can imagine, because I remember him, because I could hear them talking up above whenever I was watching, I don't know, Mary Poppins. And I just remember Dad, I think Sam fell asleep and Dad was like, Sam? And at the time I didn't realise why he'd kind of gone, he'd changed that tone of voice. But now I think, nothing back to that, I'm thinking he probably thought he might have passed at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
So it must have been horrible. It must have been absolutely horrible.
Must have been just so difficult, and especially with a child that's been sick for so long, I can only imagine that, that's been in your head a long time.
Yeah,
But it doesn't mean it makes it any easier, but you've been always dreading that day. So did he die at home?
Yeah, so he died at home.
Oh, that's nice.
Saturday, a couple of days later. And that was kind of strange.
Yeah, yeah. It's so strange. It's such a weird thing, isn't
it? I think my dad kind of just like knew. He's like, guys, come up. And my mum had been at work all day and she'd literally almost timed it perfectly to come back.
Wow.
It's such a strange thing just to see the passing of someone.
Yeah. So you weren't in the room?
We weren't in the room and he called us up there.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Just mum came back from work.
That's incredible that your mum made it at that time as well. And then so you saw his body, which is really hard as a teenager.
It is.
I think, it's really like you said, you don't really have the words for it. You're sort of like, this is big, and I'm not sure.
You're like, is this how it happens?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember he died with his eyes open.
Well, yeah.
And I did that thing where you see in TV shows and
they
films.
Close the eyes.
I did the eye close. I tried the eye close and it kind of bounced back and I was like, dude.
I'm trying to do the Hollywood moment here. Yeah, because they don't automatically, like, they have to, like, be closed, don't they, on some people. I think the nurses did that for my dad, actually, because they do often die with their eyes open. It's not always with their eyes closed, which is obviously what you imagine from watching a lot of films.
Yeah.
God, that must have been so hard, Kobe. And was your younger brother there as well?
Yeah, he was there. Everyone was there. The whole family was there at the time.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. And then what was that sort of like, do you remember anything immediately after that? Was it just a blur? Like,
it was kind of a blur. I just kind of went to my room and I was like, oh, that's that. And I remember the ambulance came, took him away. And then, we had a kind of family chat the next day. And it was like, yeah, your brother's died.
Were they very emotional, your parents, about it? Or like, what was that family chat like?
I think that's the first time I've seen my dad cry in the way that that happened. He seemed to be that the kind of rock all the way through.
Mm.
Because I think, because as a doctor and also as a dad, he kind of knew that this is what, okay, I need to present this kind of face at least to everyone else.
That's so hard. Must be so much pressure as well, to be strong in that situation. When, how can you be strong in that situation?
It's
just so, so tough. Yeah.
So I can't imagine. I can't imagine. I don't have kids at the moment, but I can't imagine having to be that with their brothers and sisters and explain what's happened and be the kind of stoic and steady ship, I guess, for everyone else in the house.
And then did you have the funeral quite soon?
So the funeral happened, a couple of weeks later, I think. And that was kind of like a random blur of a day in a way.
Mm.
I just remember it being organised and my parents kind of explained what was going to happen. And they're like, okay, so limousine's going to pick us up. Like, with a bit of a smile on the face. Going to get taken there in a limousine. I'm like, what? Why is this a good thing?
Yeah.
I mean, the limo's okay-ish, but if, like, not on the way to a funeral, not a smiley thing. And I remember the whole kind of event being that I kind of asked me if I wanted to do a speech, and I was like, nope.
No.
But I was one of the people that took the coffin and down.
That's a lot for a 16-year-old boy as well.
It is, but again, it's just you have to do it.
Mm.
But I just knew I wouldn't be able to hold it together to do like a eulogy or a speech or something.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. I didn't speak at my dad's funeral.
Yeah.
I spoke at my grandpa's funeral, but my dad, I don't think my mum, me or my brother spoke. I think other people did because it was just like...
You're too much in a bit of a haze, aren't you?
Yeah, you're like, what? Like, and I think as well, like, when you are a teenager, you're sort of like, you're like, it's not my job, that's an adult's job. Like, can an adult do that, please?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I
want to be an adult, but you wouldn't let me, so that's down to you guys.
Someone else can sort out this stuff. And was it a burial?
It was a burial in a place in Manchester. And I don't remember, I wasn't crying until, I don't remember crying until he'd been buried and we got into the car with my mum Mm. And we just kind of like hugged each other.
Yeah, of course.
And like properly wept.
Oh, that proper sobbing. Yeah. That like utter sobbing that only comes, I think, with...
that massive grief.
Yeah, grief or real tragedy. Like that real like, you know, they call like sort of like heartbreaking, your ribs are shaking. Like,
it's like, where's that come from?
Yeah, it's like...
literally, I've done that before.
It comes like from the earth, doesn't it? You feel like you're like, wow, I didn't know I could... make that sound.
Make that happen, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, I know I always say this on the show, but like, it seems like when you have a baby, you're like, I heard this noise and I was like, who's that? I was like, oh, it's me. Like, this noise comes out of you, which is like pure animal. And I think it's the same when you're grieving. It's like that animal pain. You know, like when dogs howl, it's that same thing of like...
it's that instinct.
Yeah, it's like, ow, this ow, it hurts. And it's so hard because I think we grow up, because we don't talk about death enough, we grow up with this idea of like, well, if you bang your knee... and it hurts, you cry, but then it's okay.
Yeah.
And so the idea that something just physically hurts, but it isn't a physical pain, like you didn't cut your arm.
No.
So why am I wailing as if like my leg's broken? Because it feels like my leg's broken. Yeah, it's really hard. Oh, that must have been so hard. And then did you go back to school? Like, how did you feel? How did you...
Yeah, so I went back to school, I think pretty much the first day after the school holidays finished.
Wow. Because it's Christmas.
Yes, Christmas holidays, and I kind of went back.
Yeah.
Went back with a note that my mum wrote, gave it to my form teacher, the class teacher, with a little note. And of course, a lot of the people at school knew him.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
So that was kind of a shock for some of the teachers who knew him and then seen him go to a different school. But none of the teachers said anything apart from, I remember two specific teachers who came up to me and said, you know, sorry about your brother. And I was like, that was so cool.
Oh, dude, it's okay.
It was funny. I was just thinking about these guys, just thinking about these teachers who took the time out to say this, just two of them. It was so cool of them.
I know. It's so funny that I was thinking about this yesterday. Actually, I was writing something and I was trying to remember if any teachers said anything to me. And I don't think they did.
No.
I remember one, like, because it was like before my GCSEs. I think I've told this story. So my German teacher, who I had a terrible relationship with, said to me, actually a German oral exam.
Yeah.
And she said to me like, well, you know, I know what's happened. So if you don't want to talk about your family, you don't have to. But in the whole point was you'd be like, mein Bruder ist not, you know, and ich habe ein Knitchen.
Yeah. So ich habe ein Schwester. Ich habe ein Bruder.
Yeah. So I was like, but it felt like it was being dealt with of like, it's a bit inconvenient that your father's died. So do you want to just... And I was like, yeah, it's fine. I just won't say mein Vater. I'll just say mein Mutter. Like, and that was it. That was it. But and one teacher did, because she lived next door to us. So she obviously knew. But no, yeah, my memory... I can't remember, like you said, that you're obviously moved by that. So people sort of took the time to be like, I understand kind of what's going on.
It was like, I had PE teacher and a history teacher. I was like, a history teacher... I loved him, but a lot of people hated him. He was like really, really strict, but at the same time, he was quite funny.
Yeah.
So it was like out of character for him in a way to do
be
that.
Be emotional, but that must have meant a lot to you.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And one of them, the PE teacher, came to the funeral as well.
Oh, wow.
So, which was really cool.
Yeah, it's stuff like that matters, isn't it? It's sort of like, it's hard to explain sometimes why it does, but it's just like that... Soame had an effect on other people, you know. It wasn't just your brother, and when you see other people grieving, you're like, oh yeah, like they mattered, didn't they?
Yeah.
It's like they were here, they were real, they were a person, rather than sort of going, oh no, they're just gone. Like,
yeah, something's just not, something that's not theirs. Like, was that a dream for 16 years?
Yeah, exactly, because it gets packed away and people don't quite know what to say, so you do end up thinking, did I make it up?
Yeah,
that's how I just suddenly felt sometimes with my dad. I was like, not that he didn't exist, it was like, it's just a blank. Because it was like, people wouldn't ask and I wouldn't say. So you'd just be like, you sort of in your brain is like, did I have a dad?
Yeah, I'm sure, he did exist. And he was this kind of person.
Yeah,
And I had a few friends kind of corralling around me as well. So I think the first day back at school, we had like rugby practice before school practice started properly. And one of my best friends just came up to me and said, how's things at home?
Oh.
And that was like a really cool thing to say, and it's just nice to know that even though people weren't like hugging me and like coming, there was that kind of like, dude, well, we're here for you kind of thing.
That's the thing I think so important that people sometimes don't realise. Like, it doesn't have to be a ginormous sobbing, hugging, but just exactly. Someone being like,
it's like, I know,
is everything, how are you doing?
Yeah,
and that can be enough to feel like, oh, okay, they get it. Like,
because I think you need people to do things differently, and I remember. that friend, his father then died before we went to university.
Oh, wow.
There's like a period of like my brother died, and then another one of our good friends, his father died, and then my friend who he said how's things at home died all in the space of like 2 years.
Wow.
So it was all like this kind of like, what the fuck's happened?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a horrible what's the word, like horrible awakening to what, yeah, like, what the other side of the world is, isn't it? Like, oh, there's all this other stuff, isn't
there? It just became like, this is part of life then. We just need to kind of crack on with it a bit.
Did that help having those friends though? Did you find you got closer to those two friends?
We've always like just made sure we're around for each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is that kind of a bit of closeness because you've experienced a similar kind of thing. We don't really talk about it that much. I think we did more at the time.
Mm.
But there's always been like, dude, if you ever just want to talk, I don't think I've really taken them up on it, but the offers, knowing it's there is really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it can be, well, I've talked about it before, like to have other teenagers going through it. Cause I think it's such a weird thing.
It's a weird part time of life anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, so, it's weird anyway. And you feel like sad anyway, cause you're a teenager. And then something comes along that really makes you feel sad. So to have other people just be like, yeah, I get how you feel. Yeah. It's really important. And then, how was it with your family? Did you feel like, did you guys talk about Soame, or how did you remember him?
I think my mum was like, for her, it was like every Saturday for a while was like the worst day ever.
Is that because that would be when sort of family day?
No, that's because he died on Saturday.
Oh, I see.
So she'd been at work and came back, and like, for like her every day, every, like Saturdays for a while.
Was reliving it.
Instead of like once a year on the day it happened, it was like, Saturday again, I've got to get up and do this. And she kind of asked, like, oh, now she's not playing the computer as much. Is that because that's what he did with Soame? And I was like, oh, I don't know. It might probably was probably. You're probably right. So things, I can't really remember like decompressing that much. I kind of got on with life as it was. And it was just this, you know, I was looking forward to going to uni not long after. But the family, I think everyone's there supportive and corralling of each other, and didn't feel unloved or anything like that at all. But we didn't really, I don't think we really went into discussing it so much.
Did you guys share a room, or did he have his own room?
So we had our own room at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And our other brother had his own room as well. So that became like the spare room. We didn't feel the need to do anything with it. And it was all, you know, now Soame's room kind of... For a fair while until younger brother Galibe decided to want the bigger room and move into his room.
Fair enough.
It just felt supportive, really.
Yeah. And then when you got to uni, like, did you tell people about it, or did you sort of go into that like and just kind of not, like, when the classic question of like, oh, how many brothers and sisters do you have? Like, yeah, how did you sort of negotiate that?
I don't think many people knew. A lot of people still don't know that I had a brother who died.
Mm.
And I find that it's kind of an odd situation. And I should have told the guys at uni, because, you know, met at uni, and then we lived together for a year, and then we moved into houses subsequently to each other. And I think it was only like the second year after we were like, oh yeah, I don't know how it came up in conversations, like my brother died like the year before uni.
Mm.
But I always find that a bit of a weird kind of river to cross when someone says, so do you have any brothers and sisters? I'm like, do I say one because he's still alive, or do I say, I had two brothers but one died? Then it becomes like, oh, that's a downer of a conversation. How do you navigate that stream? I mean do you get the same kind of thing? Do people well, what does your dad do?
And you're and especially I think that uni conversations, it happens less as you get older, doesn't it? Because people don't care. But like at uni, everyone's like, oh, you know, and I would talk about my mum a lot. Obviously, I'd be like, oh, my mum. And they'd be like, oh, where do your parents live?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, right, like in London. And they're like, oh, right, so do you live with your mum? And I'd be like, yeah. And then you could see they're trying to work it out. They're like, so they divorced?
Yeah,
and
you'd be like, that you feel like there's something about that, that like, conversation.
They know you're not saying something. Yeah. But like, what I found weird is that they never expected me to say he was dead.
Sure.
But then I'd be like, why? Like, people die all the time. So why? And then I'd be like, oh, he's dead. They'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. And you're like, but you've when you ask do. Someone yeah. that question, you have to have the possibilities are they're dead.
Yep.
I don't speak to them. They hate me. Or they live around the corner and we're great friends. Yep. Like, that's in there, right? Dead and in
that
there.
Is the definite option.
Yeah, so I would always be like, why are you sort of taken aback by like, oh, I'm so sorry. And you'd be like, well, it's okay. As I used to say, like, it's not your fault. You didn't kill him.
Yeah, you weren't there with a knife.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I've got easier with it, obviously, because now everybody knows. It's the joy of doing a podcast about it, Kobe. But I used to get that sort of like, you know, that slightly anxious, sick feeling when like the conversation is going towards that. And you're like, am I going to tell them? Do I want that conversation now? I'm in a noisy pub. Do I like how well do I know them? Like all of this stuff.
I think I kind of like do like a random calculation in my head as to like, how much time am I going to spend with this person after this conversation?
That's good.
So it's like, if I'm literally not going to see them again, for me, unless they bring it up like my brother died or something like that in the conversation, I'm like, yes, same with me. But I wouldn't bring it up because how do you kind of forge that afterwards?
Yeah,
like I say,
yeah,
it becomes like, oh, really? You put a bit of a downer on that. I just want a quick pint. And now you're talking about dead siblings. But if it's someone who I think I'm going to spend time with afterwards, then I'm like, I had two brothers. It's like, what do I have? Have I got two brothers or did I have two brothers?
I
just have one.
It's so weird. Isn't it?
And also there's like sort of fact of like, oh, how do you navigate this conversation afterwards? Where's it gonna pick up afterwards?
Yeah, I think what I try and do now is be aware of like how I'm feeling.
Sure.
So I'm like, if I'm feeling okay, I can be like, oh yeah, he died, I was 15. And then, you know, you have that sort of...
Nonchalant.
Yeah, just conversation, like these are the facts. But if I'm not feeling okay and I feel like a bit like, oh, I might not be a day I want to talk about it, you know.
That's it, yes.
Yeah, so then you try and navigate it of like, and again, I think that's a really good tip to be like, when will I see you again? Is it going to be like, probably it's a work thing and you don't need to go into it?
Yeah.
So I think it's totally fine to just do whatever
what
works for you.
Best of the time, yeah.
But it is so hard, isn't it? Because I spoke to someone recently, a lady who just, her son had just died, and she was saying the same thing. She was like, what do I answer when I say, how many children do I have?
Mm.
Yeah, and my mum had it for a bit when people used to say, are you married? And she'd be like, I don't know what to say.
I don't know what the answer is.
I am, but he's dead. So,
we parted through death. That's what the vows were.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so does it now not count? Like, till death do us part? So, is it now null and void? But I didn't choose that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really tricky. But I think, again, the problem is because we don't talk about it. If we talked about it more, I think we'd all practice it, wouldn't
we? Yeah, it always is an option if you ask that kind of question. So,
and then you'd be a bit more comfortable when you'd be like, oh, I know what I like saying.
Sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear that is a valid response.
Yeah, it's so
valid.
Because
obviously you're never like...
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's ever glad to hear that. Yeah, glad to hear that.
Oh, brilliant news.
Yeah.
Oh, great. That's brilliant. Good for you.
Prosecco.
Yeah, and I think the worrying about putting a downer on something is really hard because you shouldn't... It's what happened. Like, you shouldn't feel the pressure of putting a downer. Like, if anything, I feel like... Well, I've had something bad. It's now the other person's job to cheer it up. Like, I may have brought us down, but that's my life. So now your job is to...
Yeah, pick it up again.
Pick it up again. Pick up the slack.
Dance, clown.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's really tricky. And how do you feel about anniversaries and stuff like that? Like, are you somebody... Has it...
It's mainly his birthday.
Oh, right. So when's his birthday? What month is it?
It's the 12th of March.
Oh, okay. So you get it. All of your stuff is beginning of the year, right?
Yeah,
you've got January and March.
Heavy loaded.
Yeah.
To the start of the year. So it's the 12th of March is like, because I find, because there'll be sometimes months when you don't really think, I don't really think
about
him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like 12th of March, like boom.
Yeah.
It would have been his birthday. And when you like close kids, like year and having the birthday together, because that was such a, when you're kids, your birthday is like the best thing in the world ever.
So is your birthday similar time as well?
My birthday is the 1st of January. And his is like 3 months after. So we're always like, yay, get our friends together and go to McDonald's or Wimpy. And also, it seems that a lot of my friends have their birthdays on the 12th of March as well.
Wow.
And it's like, fuck, happy birthday.
Did you just find that out? Like, so just as you got older, you just happened to meet people?
Yeah, it just happened to meet people who's...
That's a bit odd, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
That's a bit funny.
So
I like that, though.
I've got three or four like good friends whose birthdays are on the same day as my brother's birthday, was is. So I always remember the 12th of March. Yeah. I always remember their birthdays as well.
They must be like, Kobe never forgets. Exactly. He's such a good friend. He always remembers our birthday. You're like, there's a reason. Like,
yeah.
But do you think that's, I think that's kind of interesting that you've ended up with friends on that same birthday.
I don't know, I was trying to work out if there's like that's a popular day for births or trying to conceive. But ultimately, I don't want to think back to when was the conception then in the
year?
You don't want to think
about it.
A horrible dark.
But then there's just something kind of, I don't know, something kind of nice that his birthday still is a part of your life in a way. Like, because if you didn't have those friends the same birthday, like it might be, like you said, a bit quiet and a bit sad, and in a way that you've got this other...
There's a buoying factor to it, yeah.
Although is it hard because then you're seeing them with birthdays and thinking, oh... I guess it's a bit of both, isn't it?
It's a bit of both. I just think of it as a joy. It's time to remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically.
And it's so hard when somebody is so young. Mm. I think that is really... I mean, other guests have said that on the show. I don't know if you feel the same of, like, aging while someone doesn't age, you know, especially... Which, obviously, because my dad was older, like, he was always old to me. I always thought he was an old man.
Well, that's it. And, yeah. What, yeah. Your dad was
44, yeah. Which now I think is not that really
old.
Young.
Yeah,
really 15, young.
15, you're like,
Yeah, 15, I thought, old man. Of course he got cancer, he's old. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. What old people get. But so I never had that aging, but I remember Jade Adams, her episode, her sister died, talking about, you know, them, you moving further away from that, the bit where you were the same, you know. So, yeah, how's that been?
That's this year for the first time. One of the guys I work with, he's kind of similar situation to myself. He's similar age to me. His brother died when he was young.
Wow.
I think his birthday's around March time, and his brother kind of died around March as well.
Wow.
And he said, yeah, sorry, Kobe, I've just been really quiet this week. This is, you know, my brother died around this time of year. I was like, oh, shit, my brother died around this time of year.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he asked me, he was like, well, how old would he have been if he's... And I was like, fuck, I actually hadn't considered that.
Yeah, yeah,
and then
yeah.
all that kind of like... conflux of my mind just going like, oh, so it would have been 37, so what would he have been had he had lived. He wanted to be a pilot, would he have done that? Probably not. So my mum would have gone, no, you're not gonna be a pilot because planes crash, and all the kind of mind explosion kind of happened. It's like, oh yeah, so he generally hasn't. For me, he'll always be the kid who used to fight in our bedrooms together.
It's hard, isn't it? It's hard. I don't think either is wrong, because that is the truth. Mm. He will permanently be in that teenage world. And I think sometimes sort of when people move it forward, because sometimes, you know, they'll be like, oh, what would your dad been like as a grandpa? I'm like, and sort of imagining an old man and imagining this world where, you know, like he met my child. And then it's so weird. It's so weird because you're like, well, I can sort of go down that road, but also...
Did it help you that much?
Does it help? Yeah. Does it help? I don't know. And I know what you mean. I think my mum said something the other day about how old he would have been. And I can't remember what she said. She said something like, oh, he would have been 70 this year or something, or next year. And that blew my mind. I was like, what? And I was like, it just... Somehow just the age really like pinpoint, you know, because you know people that age, don't
you? And 70 is like a big age, isn't it? A big like round number. There would have been a party for him probably for that as well.
So. And you just suddenly go... Oh, that seems really real.
Yeah.
Like that they're not there to do that. And I guess for you, because as I said, you're so close in age, you can really parallel the lives, can't you? Yeah.
So it would have been at university together, maybe at different ones, and would have been those kind of things. So yeah, it was a mind blowing question for me when he asked me. Yeah, I don't know why I hadn't thought about it. You probably just don't. Because...
I think so. It's just different brains do different things, and I think sometimes your brain is like, I don't want to take that person into the future because they're not there.
They're not there.
And I think some people find great comfort in that, of like, oh, they would have been this, and I can remember them and I can imagine their life. And for other people, it's like, oh, it's just a bit painful. Actually, I'd rather not have that experience. And it is, I think grief as a teenager is really, it's just so hard, isn't it? Because like you said, something happens when you don't have the words for it.
Yeah.
So then you're constantly trying to like figure out sort of how you felt at that point.
And I think a lot of that's kind of retrospective as well. Now trying to look back. I mean, these questions now you're asking me, I'm like, what was it like the days after? And I don't know if it's just a blur or I don't really remember, or if it was actually kind of like, oh, actually, well, he's at rest now because he was suffering for the last couple of years. I'm like, okay, in a way, there's a bit of happiness that he's not suffering anymore. I don't know if I remember feeling quite happy for him that he's not suffering. I don't know. So it's all those kind of things that might have been going on in my head.
Did you talk to anyone about it particularly? Did you have counselling or?
No, I didn't do. Yeah. I haven't done that. And sometimes think about it, but haven't taken the step to.
Mm. I'm not saying you have to.
No.
I just
you
wondered.
You must address this, Cody.
Yeah, yeah.
I think potentially everyone could benefit from counselling and speaking to someone about various different things.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I think at the time, because obviously that was the year, Soame died the year before my dad.
Yeah.
And at the time, yeah, like I didn't really have any counselling as a 15-year-old. But now, I think if it happened now, there'd be much more like the school, I'd hope.
Supportive,
would be
yeah.
quite supportive and pastoral care. And you might, but like, I think our generation was sort of like, I guess I just go back to school then, right?
Yeah.
Like,
can you play rugby this weekend, Kobe?
I mean, I can. Yeah. I physically can. Yeah, so it's just interesting to... I mean, so, you know, I didn't get speak to anyone until about 18 years after he died.
Sure.
And I think that's quite common with teenage grief as well, because it just takes so long for, like, you have to sort of, like, park it slightly, don't you? Sort of put it over there, then grow up yourself, then have all these experiences, and then be like, oh, hang on.
And then be able to unpick and go, oh, so that's what happened on that time. It's like when I was saying before, my dad saying, Soame, okay, just to, because he was falling asleep and he wasn't sure whether it was, you know, whether it was passing that time. But also, I often wonder, and it's a good question for yourself, maybe, is like how much of your dad passing kind of shaped your life and shaped your drive and shapes like the way you are now.
It's so hard to tell, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I find that really, I remember talking to Robert Webb about that because his mum died when he was 17, I think. And, it's so hard to like untangle it from who you are because it's fundamentally a part of who you are.
Yeah.
Which for years I really hated. I was like, oh, I don't want to be the girl that's dad died. Like, and that's, I was like, it doesn't define me. It's just a thing that happened. Is what I used to say. Yes. Okay. I think it definitely shaped the drive. Definitely. Mm. I was driven before anyway. But then my dad was extremely driven.
Sure.
And I wonder if I genetically inherited it or I was emulating it because he wasn't there. Like, it's really hard to tell things, isn't it?
To see how that went. So I think I kind of absorbed a few things from him.
Mm.
Like, I started listening to a lot more, I don't know, different music that he used to listen to more than I did when he kind of passed. I listened to... There's an episode of Freakonomics podcast, and there's like they did like a strand for like a few weeks about creativity.
Oh right, yeah.
And there's one quote which I really kind of hit me, and there's like in this based in the US, so the I think it was like a statement that said like on average, 8% of 16-year-olds experience like familial loss or parental death.
Yes.
When you're 16.
Yeah.
But then in different career pathways, that kind of changes. So they're saying like US presidents, I think there's like 26% of US presidents had a father or mother who passed before they were 16.
Oh, wow.
And then like as a poet, it's like 55% of...
What?
Yeah. So I was like, oh shit, I wonder if like...
Oh my God, that's fascinating.
How many people in the creative industries have had that kind of experience and that's been either freeing for them to say, well, let's just do this because it seems more interesting to me, or that's how that drive affects you going forward, or how that... grief or how that experience is like,
and it's so interesting because that's, I mean, you know, that's only limiting to like death because obviously there's other forms of tragedy that can happen to someone,
definitely.
But that's so interesting. I mean, well, this podcast is testament that like a lot of comedians and people who work in the creative industry have lost someone. And like my mum always like for I can't remember when it was, but she was like, it's always dads. You've got so many dead dads with these stand-ups. And I was like, yeah, perhaps there's a link somewhere
there.
Like, there's definitely like, lose it. I read someone, it's like, if you lose your father, it's like losing the person to gain approval from.
Right.
Because your mother traditionally...
is always going to support you.
Yeah, traditionally, obviously, in a wonderful world, not everyone has that, but traditionally, like, the mother is, unconditional love and the father is approval. That's what I think, like, I'm really, really crassly paraphrasing Freud or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So we've all lost our dads and then we go to get that approval from an audience.
Oh, right, from an audience, okay.
Because, like, it's like, they love me. They think they're proud of me. They're proud of me. Well, my dad's not here to tell me, but the audience are proud of me. Like,
yeah, I see you clapping. You love me.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? And do you feel that with Soame, do you feel like there's like it gave you something of like just fucking go for it? Or
well, a lot of people just say to me like, dude, you're always doing stuff, you're always like, you've got two podcasts on the go, you did tons of stuff and you just did this, that, blah blah blah, you're always like, I'm just gonna do this thing because why not have a go and see what happens? And when I heard that quote, I was like, I'm not really, I wouldn't class myself as a creative person, but I definitely class myself as someone just like, I'm going to have a crack at it.
You're definitely a creative person. Yeah, that's creative. Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you. But I think, again, like you said before, I'm not sure if that's just my personality anyway, and I would have just done that anyway, or that's a freeing factor whereby I've seen what can happen, and I'd rather just try things, and if it fails, then I've like, for me, I've tried and failed, rather than, I know a lot of people who were, I could try that, but I don't know, I could not succeed, so I'm not going to do anything. Where for me, that's like the worst thing in the world.
To not know,
like try, fail, then you move on to the next thing. My conscience is so much lighter if I know I've tried something and given it a good go and it's not worked. And then I'm like, okay, well, I did that and on to the next thing. And I've got so many other ideas of gajillions of other things in my head that I'd like to love to have a crack at. So I do wonder if that's where part of that kind of comes from.
Yeah, wanting to live life quite to a full extent. I definitely have that as well, of like, if I'm scared about something, you know, and I have terrible anxiety, but like, it doesn't stop me.
Yeah.
That's what I think is quite interesting. Like, some people who have anxiety, like, just can't, you know, really can't do the work, or they can't get out of the house. And I find the anxiety, even though I'll feel so terrified of something, I'm like, I'm still going to do it. Of course, I'm just going to do it terrified.
But there will be people, that, like I said, people won't leave the house for days and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I, you know, again, like you said, it's really hard to untangle with. Soam gave you that ability to go, oh, life's quite short, isn't it?
Yeah.
So just like,
YOLO. Yeah. As much as I hate that kind of thing.
But yeah, it has a truth to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Kobe, thank you so much for coming to talk to me about Soam.
Thank you for listening.
It was really, really lovely. What music did he like? Tell us that.
Well, he liked, we all like Michael Jackson. Problematic
things.
Another
problematic, yeah.
But also he, you know, he liked the Fugees and like earlier hip hop stuff. When I was just watching, for me, it's like everything that was on Top of the Pops was like fine. So my tastes were really varied, but also pretty naff. But then I think maybe sharpened it up a bit afterwards.
I recommend someone go, if you've listened to this, go and listen to some early hip hop.
Yeah,
right now.
Some Fugees, the second Fugees album with Ooh La La La.
Oh, and, yeah, great. Yeah, let's put that on and remember Soam.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Kobe is the host of two podcasts, Flicks Watcher and The Wire Stripped. You can find both of those wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show is edited by Kate Holland, hosted by me, Karen Lloyd, not always with a cold. The music was by The Glue Ensemble. And yeah, we recorded this one at Worcester Dance Studios. And remember, you're not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.